Hi, welcome to this special series, Prophecies of Health and Hope. Delighted to be with you today, entering your living room or wherever you are. And we're having a series here where we look at some of the prophecies in the Bible. And the Bible, of course, is made up of about 30% prophecy. And this is one of the defining differences between the Bible and, say, the Quran or the Bhagavad Gita, all these different sources of authority that people look to depending on where their perspective is. But the Bible has Bible prophecy, about 30% of it, like we said. And many times we look at those prophecies through just the lens of the prophetic timetable that they provide. And what we want to do in this series is not only look at the prophecy in terms of its timetable, but also the element of health and hope. So as I've been studying these prophecies over the last several years, I've recognized that they come from a milieu or from a context where people were struggling with areas that are very practical to us today. What we eat, what we drink, and how it impacts our health physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. So we're going to look at the prophecies through that lens. And so we'll look at Daniel chapter 1 through that lens. We sometimes look at that just as health, but there is actually a prophecy alluded to there. We'll look at that today. Then we'll look at Daniel chapter 2. And then we'll look at Daniel chapter 7. And then we'll look at Daniel chapter 8 and 9. And then finally we'll look at Daniel chapter 12 as it connects with Revelation chapter 10. And I think you're going to find this fascinating. I know I did. And it actually has revolutionized my life and also the life of many others. So let's pray together before we begin together to look at our first message in Daniel chapter 1. Father in heaven, Lord, thank you today that you promised to be with us and guide us and lead us. And we need your help as we look at your word. And we desire your Holy Spirit to lead and guide us. And we come in Christ's name. Amen. So today's message, the first one, is science, scripture, prophecy, and your health. And we're looking at the ancient book of Daniel. We're looking at Babylon, that ancient city. And they have found actually dictionaries from ancient Babylon. This is a cuneiform dictionary from way back, 455 BC, around the time that Daniel would have been there, 605, several hundred years away. And then also a letter from Nebuchadnezzar, one of the most famous kings in the history of Babylon, actually a letter from him. And we found that. We also found the Ishtar Gate, which was a gate inside of the capital there in Babylon. You can see that today in the Pergamum Museum over in Berlin. And then also interesting things like the horoscope, astrology, these things began in Babylon. And so the horoscopes, we even have people reading horoscopes today. But you'll notice there's a snake there that then has a lion on top of it. And the lion was a symbol, a kind of the mascot of Babylon. And then following a luminary body, the Jupiter, following the stars. So a lot of the things that we even see today began in Babylon. I have a book in my library called Life Begins in Sumer, where it talks about all these different things that go back to that time period, even the apothecary system, grains and grams, and then 60 seconds in a minute, and 360 days in a year. We kind of adjusted it now with leap year and things, but that sedimental system, a system based on six, was there in Babylon. So let's look together, first of all, in Daniel chapter 1. If you have a Bible there, I encourage you to open it, and we'll look at Daniel chapter 1, Daniel the first verse. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. So right there we begin with kind of a historical picture of these kings, Jehoiakim and Jehoiachin and all these different kings and Nebuchadnezzar. And actually, you can find those names back in the history book of Kings. And there was a great battle that took place between Egypt and Babylon. And caught right in the middle was Jerusalem, God's people. And Jerusalem had been following really the Egyptians, and God had said, don't go towards the Egyptians, but they did anyway. And so there was this showdown between Babylon and also Egypt there at the Battle of Carchemish. And of course, the Babylonians won. And then they came down and they started to mop up things there in those various countries. All the people that had been showing allegiance or cozying up to Egypt, their inhabitants were either killed or taken captive. And this is why we have, Daniel being born in 622, then being taken captive in 605. And then Ezekiel also was involved in 597. And then the rest of the people, like Jeremiah, he stayed there. But Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, these books were all built or written concerning the same time period of this Battle of Carchemish. So this is what happened. Now, why was it that God's people were not listening? What was going on in their lives? And why was it that they were allowed to be taken captive? Because, you know, it says there in Daniel chapter 1, verse 2, God gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into the king of Babylon's hand. He allowed him to be taken captive. But what were they doing that had led to this? Just briefly looking at this, I encourage you to study it more yourself. In 1 Kings chapter 22, it describes, chapter 22 and 23, what was happening that led them to be taken captive. It describes the story of Josiah, who was 8 years old when he became king, it says in 2 Kings chapter 22, verse 1. And he did what was right in the sight of God, and walked in the ways of his father David. He did not turn to the right or to the left. Now it came to pass, verse 3, that in the 18th year of King Josiah, that the king sent Shaphan the scribe, the son of Azaliah, the son of Meshullam, to the house of the Lord, saying, go up to Hilkiah the priest, that he may count the money that has been brought in. So they were counting it, and they began to repair the damages of the house there. Now Josiah is only about 16 years old. And when they repaired the damages of the house of God, they found, verse 8, the book of the law. And so the young king hears it read to him, verse 11. When the king heard the words of the book of the law, he tore his clothes, which means he realized they had done some things that were not right according to the book of the law. And so he asked the scribe and the others to pray for him. And he recognized in verse 13, our fathers have not obeyed the words of this book. So then there was a prophetess there as well, Huldah the prophetess. See, they rediscovered the Bible, Josiah did, as well as the spirit of prophecy, and began listening to Huldah the prophetess. And this totally changed his life as he read this. So then what did he do? Chapter 23. Now the king sent together all the elders of Judah and Jerusalem to him, and the king went up to the house of the Lord, verse 2, with all the men of Jerusalem and with all the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the priests, the prophets, the people, small and great, and he read to them what he had heard. So his study of the Bible, his listening to the spirit of prophecy, he began to share this with the leaders. And then he made a covenant to follow the Lord, verse 3, and to keep his commandments and his testimonies and his statutes all with all of his heart. And then he commanded that they bring out of the temple all the articles that were made for Baal and for Asheroth and the host of heaven, and he burned them outside of Jerusalem. Now, Baal was a fertility religion. They worshiped the phallic symbols, and they would go to these high places. And he was saying, look, let's get this out of the church, so to speak. Let's get rid of the pornography. Let's get rid of the sexual immorality. Let's get rid of the false worship. He began to do that. Then he removed the idolatrous priests whom the kings of Judah had ordained to burn incense. So they were ordaining false priests that were worshiping these idols and involved in these practices. So they had an immoral lifestyle. As a matter of fact, they also got into the health practices of the nations around them, and they begin to fall away in those ways as well. Then it says, verse 7, he tore down the ritual booths of the perverted persons that were in the house of the Lord. So there actually were perverted persons. It actually says in the margin there, Kedashim, those practicing sodomy and prostitution and religious rituals. So they had all kinds of non-biblical sexual practices that were going on in these temples surrounding Jerusalem. And that started to come into actually the temple itself. If you think your church is bad, if you think things are going terrible, just remember it actually happened back in 1 Kings chapter 22 and 23. And that's what allowed or actually led to God's people being taken captive to Babylon, because they actually were acting like Babylon. So they were taken captive to Babylon. They were involved in all these practices. And God wants us to come out of Babylonian practices in the church and out of the church. I'm not calling the church Babylon, but sometimes people get into the same practices as we see God's people back here in the Old Testament. So all these things were going on. And Josiah took away the shrines. He got rid of the false priests. And then it says, in verse 23, in the 18th year, he's 26 years old, of King Josiah, a Passover was held before the Lord in Jerusalem. And he put away all those who consulted mediums and spirits and household gods and idols. And then it summarizes verse 25 of chapter 23. Now before him, there was no king like him. This is Josiah, the young king, who turned to the Lord with all his heart, according and all of his might, according to the law of Moses, and nor after him did any arise like him. So this was the situation. The situation was one of rampant apostasy. There was a need for revival and for reformation. And this is the backdrop to verse 1 of Daniel chapter 1. So turn back with me to Daniel chapter 1. By the way, we're told that one of the young people that grew up under Josiah was actually Daniel and then his friends. So he had a faithful king that he was following from age 0 to about 12 or 13 years old. And then about 3 years later, he was taken captive at age 15. The pit of inspiration tells us he was taken captive to Babylon, he and his friends. And they were taken captive to Babylon. But they were faithful. They were honest of heart, as we're going to see. But most everybody had followed the ways of the nations around them. So let's pick it up again now in Daniel chapter 1 and turn in your Bible. And let's have you read Daniel chapter 1, verse 1 through 7. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. And he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. So it was kind of like, my gods beat your gods, so to speak. So Judah versus Babylon. Young men. Then the king, verse 3, instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish and good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. So they look for the best specimens in all these different cities, and Jerusalem was no exception. No blemish, very smart, did very well academically, looked good physically, and they were able to learn the language and literature of the Chaldeans. So they wanted to provide them education, educare in Latin, the changing of the character. They wanted to educate them, and they wanted them to learn the language and literature of the Chaldeans. And they had many more characters in their alphabet than the Hebrew script of 22. And so you had to have a very bright mind to retain even the letters of the alphabet so you could actually read the writing. And so they took them captive. And then verse 5, the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, that at the end of the time they might serve before the king. Now from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And to him, or to them, the chief of the eunuchs gave names. To Daniel, he gave the name Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah, Shadrach, and to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. Now, did you notice there, it says they appointed to them a certain thing, and at the end of the time, they would be able to serve. So there was this kind of, you might say, a little prophecy. We think you're going to do well. We know you're going to do great because of all these benchmarks. And at the end of the time, you'll be able to serve before Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar was like God. He liked to feed people from his table because God fed people and he fed people. And did you notice, what was it? What was it that the king gave these Hebrews in those verses? What did he give these Hebrew captives, these Hebrew slaves, these Hebrew servants? What did he give them to try and motivate them as they made that trek of over 1,500 miles from Jerusalem all the way back up and following the Tigris and Euphrates River between those two rivers, Meso, between Potamia River, between the rivers, Mesopotamia, as they went up and around? What was it he gave them as they arrived in Babylon to motivate them? What did he give them? And in fact, that word gave is kind of key in this chapter. He gave them, first of all, food. Does it matter what kind of food you eat? Can you make a prophecy about somebody based on the food they eat or the food they don't eat? As a matter of fact, you can. In fact, they've discovered that if you tell a person what kind of cancer you have, they can probably tell you what kind of food you were eating to lead to that. And so food is not only something you eat, but it's also something that can predict what's going to happen in the future. He gave them food. He gave them drink. He gave them the wine of Babylon. He gave them education, like we said, 3 years of education at Babylon University, or like I like to say, at BOO, B-U, Babylon University. So food, drink, education, and then finally, he gave them names. What was he attempting to do? He was attempting to actually get them on his side, giving them all these benefits and different things. It was almost like a free, full-ride scholarship to BOO, to Babylon University. Food, drink, education, and names. Now, you know, often at this time, as I'm talking with groups, I'll ask this question. Well, let's read the next verse, and then we'll ask this question. Let's look here at chapter 1 and verse 8 and read it together. Chapter 1 and verse 8. But Daniel purposed in his heart. So the king's trying to win his heart. Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now, I often ask people, what is the key word in Daniel chapter 1, verse 8, as you read it? What's the key word? Some people say defiled. You should not defile yourself. Excellent word. Some people say, most people say purposed. You know, at one time I looked up every single word in the book of Daniel. I just wanted to understand the underlying language of the book, whether it was written, the sections that were written in Hebrew or in Aramaic, and I looked them all up. And this particular word, purposed, really gripped my attention because it actually is the same word that's used back there in verse 7. In verse 7 it says, To them, the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar. The word gave is the same word as the word purposed. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. In other words, Daniel had already given his heart to God. He had already purposed in his heart. During that time where he grew up under Josiah, remember Josiah, who had brought revival and reformation for a brief time before they fell back into apostasy and were taken captive to Babylon. During that time, he and his friends, not so many people, just a small group, that tiny remnant, you might say, had purposed or had given their hearts to God. Look, Have you given your heart to God? Have you purposed in your heart? Have you given your heart to anybody? How is it that you give your heart to somebody? Have you ever given your heart to someone? Maybe you're married and say, yes, I have. Do you remember way back, when was it? And how was it that you gave your heart to someone? Well, someone says, I spent quality time. Someone says, well, I showed commitment and I did this and that. And often I say, what about even before that? What about that very first time you met? And you know, it's interesting. Look at this list up here on the screen. It's actually related to the things that happen maybe when you are giving your heart to someone. Has someone ever asked you out, hey, would you like to go out for something to eat? And that's kind of a intimate time where you get to know people, right? If they say something like, you know what? When I look at you, I'm never hungry. I don't think I would ever eat anything with you. Well, that might be, I guess, might be romantic in that maybe they're just so infatuated they need no food. But it might be a sign of saying, hey, look, I don't want to spend time with you. Or if you say, hey, I'd like to go out and maybe get a drink with you, maybe go to get a smoothie or maybe whatever the drink is. And they say, you know, when I think about getting drinks, I don't think about drinking anything with you. That would send a message. I'm not interested in giving my heart. Or education. Sometimes, you know, we talk to each other, we educate each other about what we like. I like these documentaries. I like to watch historical things. I like to watch or read this. I like this kind of music. And we begin to educate one another. And it's a part of winning someone's heart. What they eat, what they drink, what they do, what is actually characterizing them, their education. And then finally, what happens? You start maybe calling each other pet names like, hey, boo-boo, or whatever it is, or honey, or sugar, or I don't know. I've heard all kinds of names. And so actually, when it says that Daniel purposed in his heart, it actually shows that the king was trying to win his heart with food, drink, education, and names. But he says, you know what? I'm already taken. I've already given my heart to God. That powerful word, I purposed in my heart. I gave my heart to God. Now, let's take a little closer look, because conceptually we understand this, but how was it that Daniel actually gave his heart and led the king ultimately to give his heart and led the eunuch that was taking care of them to give their heart? How did that happen? And we're even reading this today. And hopefully, as you're watching today, you will again give more of your heart to God. Well, how did that happen? Look back there in Daniel chapter 8, or chapter 1, verse 8. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself and not take the king's food or delicacies. Now, look, this guy's 15 years old. He's very young. Some people say, you know, wait till you're older, sow your wild oats. No, this is a book for teenagers. And he stands up. And he won't give in to the king's food, his drink, his education, or names. What would you call that, though? You're taken captive if you're looking at it through the lens of Nebuchadnezzar. And he's looking at this. What would you call it? You'd probably call it proud, arrogant, something that actually needs to be addressed. You're getting a full ride scholarship. You're getting the best food money can buy. And you're saying, hey, look, I'd rather not have that. This would be highly offensive when looked at through the lens of the king of Babylon. But let's look at it now through the lens of God himself. How would he have looked at Daniel? What would have been the thoughts in his mind? Wow, this is my man. He's courageous. He's faithful. He understands everything I've done for him. I've given him a good mind. I've given him a good body. I'm the one that made him look good. I'm the one that made him be able to think well. My ministers, my preachers, my king Josiah was the one that led him to understand the Bible and understand the spirit of prophecy. And it was through the study of those books and understanding those things that he was given the power to think and to do. It was because of my grace that he is like he is. In Daniel chapter 1, we read again, it says, but Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor the wine with which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. So we see then that Daniel stepped out in faith, and then God brought him into favor with the chief of the eunuchs. The word favor is like grace. He stepped out in faith, and God gave him grace. But that was not the end of it. After this, notice what happens in verse 10. The chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who has appointed your food and drink, for why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then you would endanger my head before the king. And so Daniel said to the steward, whom the king of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let your appearance be examined before you, or our appearance be examined before you, and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies, two groups. And as you see fit, so deal with your servants. And so he consented with them in this matter and tested them for 10 days. Now, what's fascinating here is, like we said, we need to learn how to give our hearts to people by, you know, stepping out in faith with giving them food, drink, education, different things here. But now Daniel is learning this lesson, or sharing this lesson of how he has given his heart to God in a trial, a test of his faith with this eunuch that's in charge of him. The eunuch's up, he's kind of freaked out. He says, wait a minute, the science that I know about, the king I know, his diet, his drink, his education, all these things, this is what you need to trust. But Daniel says, no, I want to give you another possible scenario. And so he sets up a scientific study, and he says, why don't we just try this for 10 days? Let's step out in faith and see whether or not God gives us grace. And so he's encouraging this man to step out with him in faith. Did you notice what was set up? Two groups were set up. One was going to eat the king's meat and his delicacies and drink his wine, and the other was going to eat plant foods, or things grown from seeds, literally is the word, and drink water. And this test would go on for how long? For 10 days. So it was specifically defined. We're looking at the health characteristics of these two groups as it relates to what? Their diet and what they drink. And then there's a specific two elements that are pointed out, those that are eating a plant-based diet versus those that are not. And this is why the New England Journal of Medicine, among others now, calls this one of the oldest clinical trials, one of the oldest scientific studies. Sometimes people say, wait, science should be preferred over the Bible, but actually the Bible is where we got the idea, the logic behind scientific thought. So, eating things grown from seeds, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. In other words, things grown from seeds and also water. You know, many of the conditions that have made people susceptible to various viruses and different things, and then actually kill them outright themselves, are addressed by this diet. Cardiovascular disease does better with this kind of diet. Diabetes, COPD, obesity, hypertension, all of these, what we call comorbidities. So what is it that happens when you decrease the oil, take it out of the diet, the fish, the fowl, the meat, the dairy? What happens when you take all these things away? What if you were to step out in faith and try that today? Would you have similar results, or would you have positive results or negative results? Well, what they found in World War II, they looked at the people in the countries where the Germans had come. They took away all of their meat products, their dairy products, and then they had to basically live off the land, maybe eat berries and twigs and vegetables, whatever was in their garden. And notice this graph looking at the cardiovascular, or rather circulatory diseases, which would include your heart, in Norway. And it starts in 1927 there, and then it goes up to 1940, right there now in World War II. The Germans come and eat all their food and all those things, and they're eating basically plant things. And notice what happened to the circulatory diseases. They basically went way down, almost non-existent. Very fascinating. And this is where they begin to study the idea of risk factors because of this study. But what about the Dianol diet itself? What if you follow it today? They've actually done a number of studies. I was talking to Richard Bloomer the other day, who runs a lab in Memphis. In fact, I'm going to have him come and speak at our institution, I believe, coming up. And he's done a number of studies replicating the ancient Daniel study of Daniel chapter 1. And he found that a 21-day Daniel fast improves selected biomarkers of antioxidant status and oxidative stress in men and women. So oxidative stress, what does that mean? When you have an oxidative stress, it's kind of like, you know, hydrogen peroxide. You pour it out and it begins to just fizz, and wherever those things are going, those molecules, they're causing damage to the molecules around them. And if that's happening throughout your body because of your diet, and you can change the diet and decrease all that shaking and pushing around of those antioxidants or those oxidants, and you can work against them with antioxidant foods, then it decreases the oxidative stress, and you're not going to get as much disease as a result. And then another study, both the traditional and modified Daniel fast improved the cardio metabolic profile in men and women. So cardio, that meaning the heart, and the metabolic, the lipids, the levels of different things, your cholesterol levels and all these different things, the profile actually improves when you modify the dietary intake in accordance with the Daniel fast as well. And so it works. If you go towards this, you have a very positive health outcome. Not only that, the effect of a 21-day Daniel fast on metabolic and cardiovascular disease risk factors in men and women as well. Those risk factors also improved just because of eating fruits and vegetables and whole grains and nuts and seeds. And then notice the pictures to prove it. I kind of like that. I have another friend, his name is Caldwell Esselstyn. And these are some pictures from his book, but I remember seeing them when he first sent them out. And we were all working what was called the Coronary Health Improvement Program. And maybe you've heard of that program. And that program basically puts people on a Daniel fast, a Daniel diet. If you want to find, you know, look it up, Coronary Health Improvement Program, and you may find a program in a city even now. I know at one time there were about 300 cities that had these. Well, anyway, this is a picture from that book that he wrote, and this is a picture of his friend's heart, who at the Cleveland Clinic could not have surgery because he had such a bad heart. And you can see the left anterior descending, the LAD there in the left picture, is filled with all kinds of, it's probably not broccoli, it's probably not plant things, it's things that are, meat, dairy, cholesterol, and his artery was such that he needed heart surgery, but it was so bad he couldn't have it. And so he had to actually just try a mechanism or a means of getting better that was not surgery. And so he went on a Daniel fast-like diet. And for 3 years, he kept on that. And notice what happened. Look at the right picture. That vessel now no longer is all, you know, occluded or shut down. It now has opened up and now more blood flow can go through there. But notice the other things. Look at all those other vessels around, so-called collateral circulation, that now there's more blood being delivered to the heart muscle simply because he went on a Daniel diet. So can you see why we're calling this prophecies of health and hope? Daniel made a prophecy that he would get better. And this is what happens when you eat the kind of food that he talked about. Notice what happens in just 10 days. That was a three-year picture. In other words, if you know he had been going to school for 3 years in Babylon, his vessels would have been that healthy compared to the others. But notice what happens in just 10 days, the time that he was saying he wanted to be tested. This is a picture, a PET scan, positron emission tomography, that looks at the amount of perfusion before they took the cholesterol down, and then after they took the cholesterol down. And notice there, before there was that red part is the part where there's vigorous perfusion. And then on the right part, you can see it almost doubles in just 10 days. So look, if you start eating and doing things the right way, you, I will prophesy, are going to have health and more hope almost instantly, but certainly within 10 days. Your cholesterol goes down to, when it goes down that below 150, you're almost heart attack proof. And then notice here again, another dramatic picture from the left, which was before the treatment, to the right. So what's happening? One of the things that's happening is the circulating endothelial progenitor cells are functioning well, and they are able to produce something called nitric oxide. And nitric oxide is actually made up from these various things here. We see arginine, and it fights against the oxidative stress that's involved in all the major risk factors by secreting a substance called nitric oxide. That's what the endothelium does. And nitric oxide is a vasodilator. So when I used to work in the emergency room back in Michigan, Benton Harbor and St. Joe, we would have people that would come in with heart attacks, all kinds of heart attacks going on, and we would put up nitroglycerin drips, or we might give them sublingual nitric oxide. Not nitric oxide sublingual, but we give them this under their tongue, a nitro tab, and it would go in and it would start opening up those vessels. But if you eat the right diet, the entire system, the entire circulatory system is releasing nitric oxide. And this is what happens when you eat the Daniel-like diet, foods high in arginine. Now, what are these foods high in arginine? Interestingly enough, things grown from seeds, just like we saw there in Daniel chapter 1, are huge. Nuts and seeds. Pumpkin seeds, probably the highest. Watermelon, don't spit them out, just eat them. Sesame seeds, walnuts, almonds, all of these nuts, some of them are right from the sanctuary, the almond blossoms and then almonds that were in the most holy place in the ark. These are foods that are high in arginine and will increase the ability to make nitric oxide that will improve the cardiovascular health. What about legumes as well? The legumes as well, soybeans, you might say tofu, and raw peanuts, chickpeas, or garbanzos, we call them, and then seaweed. All these things, high in arginine. And there might be some others I haven't mentioned. But these were the things that Daniel was eating in the Daniel fast, and it increased the size of the interior size of those blood vessels with nitric oxide that dilated those vessels wherever they went. More blood flow to every part of the body, even the head, so you get better perfusion to your brain, you're going to do better mentally, you're going to do better physically with your heart, you're going to do better in all these different areas. And not only just there in the heart muscle, in every single area of the body, like I mentioned, this is looking at the volume or the pressure, the pulse volume in someone's ankle. And then after just 1 year, notice that's almost improved by 50% or more. Amazing. Now, there's another thing they found. You know, someone says, well, you know, I've tried that, but it's hard for me to stay on it. I could do it for 10 days like Daniel. But you remember, Daniel kept doing it his whole life. And so they did a study of compliance with diets. One study looked at the Atkins diet, the Ornish diet, the Weight Watchers diet, the Zone diet. And they looked at weight loss and heart disease risk, all these different things. And they found that at 3 months, there was a 50% compliance for all these diets. I don't know about you, but if I got 50% on a test, I would not think that was very great, and neither would my parents or those that were paying for my bill. At 6 months, it was 40% or lower. I mean, that is okay, it's better than nothing, but it's not very good. But then they added something that was fascinating. They said, let's do this over again, but let's add in a study of the book of Daniel. Let's show people that this diet was in the book of Daniel. Let's show them that actually this was something that was related to something God said to do in His Word. And then they measured it. Compliance for those then studying the book of Daniel along with their diet change was measured at 3 weeks, 3 months, and 6 months, and notice what happened. At 3 weeks, they had 95% instead of 50%. I mean, that's like an A versus an F. And at 3 weeks, 85%, still like a B plus. And at 3 months, 80%. 85% at 3 months. And then, so you're still getting a B plus. And then 80% at 6 months. And what was the only difference? A study of this prophecy of health and hope. Boy, this is something not only I need, but my neighbors need. How many people do you think in your neighborhood need more help and they need more hope? Maybe they're concerned. Maybe they don't want to have these diseases that would make them susceptible to viruses and other things that are out there. And this is the very thing that can help them increase their health and decrease their risk factors. And if you couple it with the study of the book of Daniel, whoa, it's even better. So this actually is what we see happening many times here, even at our New Start program in Weimar, California. New Start is an acronym: nutrition, exercise, water, sunlight, temperance, air, rest, and trust. And as we look at that program, it's an 18-day program. It's not quite 21. We do have a 10-day program here with the depression and anxiety recovery program, and we see great numbers in all those areas that we just looked at, just like we see there with Daniel in 10 days. And then, and in fact, we studied the book of Daniel with them. We show them that, and they go, oh, that's why the program's 10 days. And then 18-day program, not 21 days like the Daniel studies we just looked at, but pretty close. And we look at their nutrition. We help them exercise. Daniel walked, of course, 1,500 miles. He got water on that walk. He had sunlight and air. So we look at all these different things in the New Start program, and amazing things happen. Notice what's happening here in the 18-day residential lifestyle program. The lipids improve. The total cholesterol drops from 213 down to 187, sometimes even lower. These elevated lipids, like we saw in that study, are associated with cardiovascular diseases and hardening of the arteries and heart attacks. And then also blood pressure medications. Many times people come in, this is, you know, 94 people, 81 of them completely went off their medications by the end, and 12 stayed on the same dosage, and 1% went up a little bit. By and large, I mean, look at that, 86.2% go off their hypertension medications. Diabetes, hypertension are often comorbid conditions that make people vulnerable for other things, like other infections and other things as well. So fascinating studies coming out. This was, of course, in 2019, just last year. These are studies within the last couple of years. There was a significant improvement in the systolic, that is the very hard lub-dub of your heartbeat, after the program in participants with diabetes. So improvements then, you might say, of vascular circulation, which is needed by diabetics and others as well. And the same thing with diabetics decrease hypertensive medication and improve blood pressure in 18 days, done back in 2019 as well. And then the miles walked per day, they were able to do more exercise. Sometimes people come here, they can't even really move. It's a hassle to even sit up. And yet they come and maybe they can't even walk more than 100 yards or even less. And by the end of it, many times they are walking for miles, miles. Fascinating and also hopeful. A prophecy of health and hope. So body mass index, METS scores, physical endurance, all are significantly improved in this modern day Daniel type program, the New Start program, just in 18 days. This was a study done actually in 2020. And then in the journal Circulation as well, an 18-day intervention was able to improve kidney function in more than half the participants. Now, most people say kidney function, once they go bad, you can forget it. There's no help. There's no hope. But there is help. There is hope in Daniel chapter 1's diet. The increased blood flow was due, They thought to an increase in exercise, a decrease in protein, specifically elimination of animal protein. So they went into that things that's grown from seeds in a plant-based diet. It even improved it more with your kidneys. So even kidney disease sometimes can be either slowed down or stopped and potentially even reversed. And then the blood urea nitrogen and the creatinine levels, also markers from the kidneys, on average were 12.39. And then they went down to 10.50. And that's a significant drop again. So look at your head gets better. Your heart gets better. Your kidneys get better. All these things get better. So this is what we saw happening when they went away from Babylon's diet and they went to Judah's diet. Now, as we read there in Daniel chapter 1, they gave them the plant-based foods and they gave them the water to drink. And let's look at the back at the text itself to see what happens. We ended, I believe, in verse 14. So let's pick it up with verse 14. He consented with them in this matter and tested them for 10 days. Now notice what happens. At the end of the 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. So what does that mean? They looked like their skin turgor, the robustness of their skin, the circulation of their skin looked good. They looked better and fatter in flesh. They weren't gaunt. They weren't looking hungover. They weren't looking like they had petechiae from using alcohol and different things on their face. They didn't have those kind of things. They looked better, appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portions of the king's delicacies. Again, an allusion to science. There's that group and there's this group. Maybe they had a statistical chart. I don't know. But there it was. Thus, it says, verse 16, because they saw this, and they saw the scientific validity of it, you might say. Verse 16 says, thus, the steward, or his name was Melzar, took away their portion of delicacies and the wine that they were to drink and gave them vegetables. So he says, wait, that actually worked. That is a great improvement. So let's just go do away with the Babylonian diet and let's move to the Judah diet. You know what the word Judah means? It's from the word Jew, which actually means praise. And I'm sure they were praising the Lord, these Hebrews, as they saw that the physical aspects of God's diet, eating God's foods that were outlined as the best foods in the Pentateuch, that is the first five books of the Bible, things grown from seeds, that would be the same thing as you saw in Genesis 1:29, fruits, nuts, grains, and seeds. In other words, the diet before sin, that diet was helping them physically. But then notice what happens next. Verse 17. And as for these four men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. So not only was there physical benefits to what they had seen, not only was there physical benefits to be seen in this PhD study that he was presenting here, this study, but there was also mental benefits. Did you notice that? They had knowledge. Not only knowledge, they had wisdom or skill to understand all visions and dreams and all of the literature and wisdom. And they were able to analyze and they were able to use their minds. Their minds were sharp. And by the way, when you're drinking water, just within minutes of drinking like just a 16-ounce bottle of water, your mental reaction time goes up like 13-14%. So drinking water instead of some kind of drink that elevates your blood sugar or elevates it and then it plummets like alcohol does, it goes up and then it goes down. And you're drinking water, you're eating those plant foods, hopefully food just grown as close as possible, and they're unpacking themselves. so that not only are you feeling better physically, but your mind has just the right titration of blood sugar and all these other different things, and you're not thrown off. In fact, they did a study of people in prisons. They put one on kind of a Daniel diet, and they put another on whatever they wanted to eat. And they discovered that those that were put on the plant-based diet had less problems in prison. They got out years sooner. They were able to control themselves. They did another study in prisons that showed that people that were on a plant-based diet that was food just grown, they did much better. In fact, most people that go to prison, many of them have diabetes and these other things that are causing them not to control their minds as effectively. But Daniel's diet not only helped him physically, but also mentally, it says here. Now let's go on. Now at the end of the days, when the king had said they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them near before Nebuchadnezzar. This is like after 3 years. Remember, this is a 10-day test, but now 3 years. And he brings them in, and this is what it says. And among them are none, among them all, so they looked at all both groups, among them all, what happened? None was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore they served before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding of which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than the magicians, astrologers were in his realm. Thus Daniel continued to the first year of King Cyrus. Now I want to think about that as we're closing. Look at what's happening. They've stepped out in faith for just themselves, and then God gave them a friend in the court who could cook the right food for them. He got freaked out. They stepped out in faith, and then they saw the results after a 10-day test. But then they stepped out in faith for the rest of their academic time for 3 years, and now they had mental superiority, and it's 10 times better. But did you notice something? Did you notice something? Did you notice something about the names that I read? What names were used to describe them? What names were used? Well, the names that they were given, Daniel means God is my judge. But when he got to Babylon, they gave him the name Belshazzar. Bel, protect his life, or Prince of Bel. But when the king was testing and got through testing, which name did he use? He didn't use Bel to Shazzar. Bel was a god. He uses the name Daniel because he's saying, look, God was the one that helped him physically. God was the one that helped him mentally. And it was God that helped him emotionally. And so he's giving credit to his God. I judge that it's Daniel's God that helped him. Next guy comes up. His name is Hananiah, means God is favored. When he got to Babylon, they gave him the name Shadrach, which means at the command of a coup. But he says, look, I'm not following the commands of a coup. He's not the one that helped me. The one that has helped me is Yahweh. You know, he is the one that helped me. Elohim, Hananiah, God has favored me. Then the next name, Mishael, again, Elohim. Who is what God is? Me, who is as God is. That was his name, but they changed it when they got him and said, look, we don't want you to be like that anymore. We want you to be Meshach, who is as a coup is. But when they tested him, they said, look, the one that gave him this ability to be better physically and to be better mentally and emotionally is his God. So they used his spiritual name. Then Azariah, Yah again, one who Jehovah or Yahweh helps. And that was his name they gave to him. But when they recognized all of the physical, emotional, and mental benefits that he had, they didn't call him by that name. They called him Abednego. They didn't call him Abednego, servant of Nebo. They called him Azariah, whom God helps. How many think that this is powerful? Because after they saw this prophecy given, they tested the prophecy for 10 days and then 3 years. And when they tested it and they saw these people had stepped out in faith, not just for one day, not just 10 days, but for 3 years, they had to acknowledge what? Their judgment was what? That God had favored them. That God had made them who they were by eating God's food, his plan, his way of doing things. That God had helped them. So, dear friend, do you think that this prophecy is a prophecy of hope and health, not just for them, but for you? Could someone else in your neighborhood benefit from this? Have you seen God's grace in your life as a result of following these things? Or would you like to see more of God's grace by stepping out in faith and relying on Him to reveal His grace more fully to you? Where is it that He's calling you particularly to step out in faith today? Maybe it is an area of your physical life. Maybe the things you're eating could be improved on. Maybe you could just, you know, follow those recipes. Maybe you could get in touch with the New Start. Maybe you could take our New Start online program. Maybe you could get in touch with the programs offered in your local Seventh-day Adventist churches. Many of them have programs that are excellent, of different names and different types. They have cooking schools. They have depression recovery programs. They have all kinds of things meant to serve the community. Where is He calling you to step out in faith today? And have you given God credit for what's happening? You know, the thing I like about this is it's a prophecy of hope and health that's from God. That's not something ultimately you can do. That's something that He can do. Only He can do through you. But you know, each of us have been given a measure of faith. But until we exercise it, it really doesn't do much for us. The difference between faith that is not exercised and faith that is exercised is trust. Trust is saying, I will try that. Did Daniel do that? Yeah, he purposed in his heart. He gave his heart. This is an act of the will. He trusted God. He stepped out in faith physically. And God helped him. And he stepped out in faith again, led others to step out in faith with him. And God blessed them. And then as a result, they saw the benefits physically, emotionally, mentally. God wants that not only for you. He wants it for your family. He wants it for your community. And He wants you as a result of seeing His grace, seeing what He does for you, as He refreshes you, as He shows you His benefits, He just wants to give you a new name. You are mine. You are my child. You are a Christian. You need to know not only His name, but your name in Him. God bless you.